I realize that coming together on a Saturday to talk about dinosaurs may be kind of weird to some people, maybe weird to a lot of people. Let me begin by saying this. The reason that I talk about this subject occasionally and write about it is because, number one, unashamedly, I believe that God created everything. And I believe that everything that He inspired His writers to write down for us is entirely accurate. I believe that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him. Without Him was not anything made that was made. I fully believe that. I believe in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Because I believe what the Bible says, and by the way, as we think about some of the things we talked about last night in regard to how creation makes sense and the biblical account of creation makes sense, and we'll be talking about that more throughout this weekend. The Bible has never been, the Bible writers were never inaccurate in anything. You realize that science, and I love science, I love true operational experimental science. I'm not real big on the grandiose theoretical science and all of the theories that are out there, especially regarding our origins. But what we've seen time and time and time and time and time and time again is that science changes. And there's nothing really wrong with that, except what you and I are told constantly is you evolved from ape-like creatures millions of years ago. And a quarter of a billion years ago, nearly, the dinosaurs evolved and they became extinct some 60, 65, 70 million years ago. We're told those things over and over and over and over again. The Bible has always said the same thing since the Bible has been written through inspiration. And it's never been shown to be inaccurate. It's always shown when verifiable to be accurate. And yet science changes their story. I should say evolutionists have changed their story of evolution time and time and time again. I realize it's kind of odd to be in a church building, a building that is owned by the church, to meet in here on a Saturday when many of you are accustomed to sleeping in after having only gone to bed about 4.5 hours ago or so. Sleeping in and doing some fun things on Saturday, and hope you could say that this has been enjoyable to be here today after the final bell has rung or all the events are over with today. But I want you to understand that what we're talking about today in most places, in most schools, never gets talked about. It never gets the time of day. And the fact is, it's kind of sad that in a lot of churches, they would rather not just deal with this subject because it's a little bit controversial, and because if we talk about this subject, people might just think that we're stupid for talking about this. Well, I would like to encourage you, especially our young people who are here today, to open up your minds, to look at the evidence, and then you decide for yourself what you think about these things. As I mentioned last night, I'm not here to try to dupe you into believing something that I'm not really sure about. I'm not here to force you to believe exactly what I believe, because I can't do that. As you continue to grow up in this life, you have to make decisions. You have to decide for your own what you are going to do, what you are going to believe. And you need to believe the truth because you know it is truth. And as we talk about these things related to creation and evolution and science and the Bible and history, I want you to just consider some of these things, again, that most people do not hear about. One of the reasons that I discuss this subject of dinosaurs is because more than anything I have ever seen. You see, there would be no reason to talk about dinosaurs if evolutionists never used dinosaurs to teach their theory of evolution. I mean, put it this way, if evolutionists talked about dinosaurs about the same amount of time they talk about kangaroos, I probably wouldn't be talking about dinosaurs. But the fact of the matter is, dinosaurs, more than anything I've ever seen, they are the poster children of evolution. Let me go back just to that one slide here to let you see. These are just some of the books and the magazine covers in recent times that have dinosaurs on the cover of them, and they're used to promote the idea of the general theory of evolution that we discussed last night. Let me show you three or four slides of some of these books and what they have to say in them. Like this book for, I think it would probably be for about second graders on dinosaurs, which says, millions of years ago, I think this is page one actually, millions of years ago, dinosaurs roamed the earth. There were dinosaurs on earth for 120 million years, but all of them had disappeared long before the first humans lived. The last page of the book says, the last of the dinosaurs died out about 70 million years ago. Whatever happened, it is important to keep in mind that dinosaurs lived on this earth for at least 120 million years. According to the most recent discoveries, humans have lived here for only a few million years. Now, I'm not going to spend the time to go into all this, but let me just say, this is what their theory says. This is the story that they tell, but please understand, they have no proof of this. This is the story they tell based upon things that they see in the ground and based upon what their theory has basically forced them to tell. Raise your hand if you've ever heard of the Magic School Bus series. Yes, you have, haven't you? Okay, put your hands down. Raise your hand if you've ever read a Magic School Bus book or had one read to you. Put your hands down. Raise your hand if you've ever watched a Magic School Bus cartoon. Just about everyone has. I think we have about 25 or so. Maybe we may have every Magic School Bus little show that's ever been made, or at least a lot of them. Probably 20, 25, or 30 of them. And the fact is, just like in your science books, there's some really good science in your science books. And there's some really neat things that will be taught in the Magic School Bus series and things such as this. But here was a book they put out, the Magic School Bus book on In the Time of the Dinosaurs, that was totally inaccurate based upon the evidence I'm going to show you today. Dinosaurs were on Earth 1,500 times longer than humans have been so far. No person ever saw a dinosaur. When early humans appeared on Earth, dinosaurs had already been dead for millions of years. Here is a textbook that was used in middle schools all over this country. The one that I have came from Graves County, Kentucky. It's been used in Alabama. The same exact page layout was used in a larger textbook in California. So I would assume it's been used, if it's been used in those states I just mentioned, it's probably been used in many others. This particular textbook would have been used as kind of a, probably part of a 9-week study on evolution change over time. It's about a 100-page textbook on evolution, the theory of evolution. Take a wild guess what you see and hear about more in this textbook than anything else. Take a wild guess. Dinosaurs. In fact, one out of every 3 pages in this textbook on evolution has pictures or information about dinosaurs on them. I mean, much of the information really has nothing whatsoever to do with evolution. It's just, here's a cool picture of a dinosaur, and by the way, dinosaurs ate tons of vegetation, etc., etc. So they just kind of put this in there. Well, let me ask you this. Anybody know a guy named Jared? You know a guy named Jared? You know a guy named Jared that's been the poster child of Subway now for, what, maybe 10 years or something like that? You know, Jared weighed 400 pounds or something, and now he weighs 195 or whatever it is. Who could tell me what the poster child of Geico is? The what? The gecko and the caveman. So you know who the poster children of these companies are. They've done a really good job advertising. Who is the poster child? I think I heard someone say this animal. Who is the poster child of Aflac? The duck. So you know that. Well, more than anything I've ever seen, that's pretty good. More than anything I've ever seen, dinosaurs, I mean, here is proof, I believe. Dinosaurs are the icon of evolution. Now, there's several icons of evolution that are out there, but nothing I've ever seen is more iconic to the theory of evolution than dinosaurs. Here's a book that I have in my office called A Very Short Pop-Up History of Life on Earth. This is not for teenagers, even though you might like to look at some of your little brothers or sisters' books. This is for toddlers. Notice on the cover you have an illustration of a dinosaur with a baby on his head. The story they tell in this book is that life evolved in the oceans, and this is basically from beginning to end of this very short book, probably about 15 words. Okay, life evolved in the oceans, and then it evolved into fish, and then it evolved into amphibians, and then reptiles, smaller reptiles, and then dinosaurs, and then mammals, and then man. This is the very back of the book. Very back of the book says, millions of years ago, life on earth started in the oceans, then it moved on the land, and eventually led to you. We have toddlers being taught this. By the way, I was blown away when a Christian family up in Virginia gave this to me and said, Eric, we were given this by some Christians as an entertaining book for our child. I didn't really understand. I don't think the Christians really understood what this book was teaching, because this is very anti-biblical. It's very contrary to what the Bible says. By the way, concerning parents who teach their children something other than evolution, one of the more famous evolutionists in the world today, Daniel Dennett, said, those of us who have freedom of speech will feel free to describe your teachings as the spreading of falsehoods and will attempt to demonstrate this to your children at our earliest opportunity. Young people, what this ought to let you see is that people who are very adamant about teaching the general theory of evolution, which would be not all public school teachers, but many of them. I read a statistic the other day that said, if I remember correctly, only 15% of science teachers in public schools are creationist. So approximately 85, based upon the poll that they did, about 85% of science teachers in public schools are evolutionist, atheistic or theistic evolutionist. And by the way, I'll be talking more about theistic evolution and some things such as that in the Bible class period, Lord willing, tomorrow morning. But this should show you that individuals like Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins and others, they are serious about striving to get across to you the idea of evolution as early as possible. Statements like this can be found in National Geographic. No human being has ever seen a live dinosaur. Use this GeoGuide page to help capture the interest of young readers and stimulate discussion with them. Another reason to discuss this topic, I believe, not only because it is the poster child of evolution, that is dinosaurs, but because even evolutionists themselves know that if people ever came across evidence that humans once saw and lived with dinosaurs, then the whole theory of evolution is turned upside down. I want to show you a statement from a man by the name of Philip Kitcher, Dr. Philip Kitcher. He wrote a book, and it's a book that the renowned Stephen Jay Gould called a brilliant book. And in this book called Abusing Science, The Case Against Creationism, Dr. Philip Kitcher claimed that solid evidence for the coexistence of dinosaurs and humans would shake the foundations of evolutionary theory because, of course, the dinosaurs are supposed to have been long extinct by the time the hominids arrived on the scene. He said this would shake the foundation of evolutionary theory if you could prove that humans and dinosaurs lived around the same time or at the same time. Because, wait a minute, even our ape-like creatures, our alleged ape-like ancestors, even they weren't supposed to be around during the time of the dinosaurs. If I get a chance in the next hour, I'll show you some quotations about evolutionists who've said, wait a minute, the only mammals that were supposed to be alive during the time of the dinosaurs were small little rat-like things. So humans certainly weren't around then. Our ape-like, alleged ape-like ancestors weren't around then. In fact, you didn't have many mammals get really bigger than little rats during the time of the dinosaurs, as the story goes. Well, I want to start by talking about what the Bible has to say about this. I had a gentleman come into my office one time and he said, Eric, I'm very bothered by this. I'm very bothered by the fact that I don't read the word dinosaur in the Bible. I don't read about dinosaurs in the Bible, and that's confusing to me. He was a college student there in Montgomery, and I was happy to talk to him and try to answer his questions to the best of my ability. Now, by the way, we are having a question and answer period this afternoon, so I would encourage you, if there are things that I don't make very clear today to you, please write them down on the note so you'll remember to ask that later. If there are other questions that come to mind as we talk about dinosaurs and icons of evolution and later this afternoon, evolutionary hoaxes, please feel free to think about or remember those questions that you have and ask them during the question and answer period. But his question was, why don't we read about dinosaurs in the Bible? And I said, you know, that's a very good question. Let me respond to that two or three different ways. First of all, please understand that the Bible was written, beginning to be written, some 3,500 years ago in Hebrew and Aramaic. And then the New Testament was completed about 1,900 years ago, written almost all in Greek language. And And then it wasn't translated into English until the 16th century. And you didn't have the well-known King James translation until 1611. And the word dinosaur, the English word dinosaur, was not invented, was not coined until the 1840s. So really, you shouldn't expect to see the English word dinosaur unless translators since 1842 chose to translate a particular Hebrew, Aramaic, or Greek word dinosaur, because that word did not exist. It was not coined until the 1840s. The fact of the matter is, we haven't been learning a lot about dinosaurs from the fossil record in modern times until fairly recently. And by that I mean, we didn't learn about these animals from the fossil record until the 1800s and closer to our time. From what I understand, one of, if not the first dinosaur that was ever named, was Iguanodon, and it was named back in the 1820s. And then it was after that, a few years after that, that they actually came up with a term to cover all of these extinct reptiles. The word dinosaurs comes from two Greek words, dinos and soros, or dino and soros, which means fearfully great or terribly great lizard. So number one, realize that that word was invented in much more recent times when you compare it to how long the Bible has been around. Number two, there are a lot of animals that are not mentioned in the Bible. There are a lot of things that are not mentioned in the Bible. And simply because they are not mentioned in the Bible doesn't mean they do not exist. In fact, right now, you could probably just start making a list of all the things. In fact, I've wondered all the animals and just things that we maybe talk about every day that are not mentioned in the Bible, specific things that we could come up with, doesn't mean the Bible doesn't generally have something to say about them. I don't know that you'll ever read about penguins in the Bible. I don't know if you will ever read about, someone say something else? Dolphins. I don't think you ever read about dolphins in the Bible. I don't know that you ever read about kangaroos or duck-billed platypuses in the Bible. But does that mean that God didn't make them? Does it mean that they weren't a part of the original creation? Doesn't mean that at all. In fact, what we read in Genesis chapter 1, generally speaking, is that God made land animals, all land animals, on day 6 of creation. On day 5, you recall, He made the animals that swim in the seas, that fly in the air. And He made, and by the way, keep something in mind. God did not categorize animals. God didn't have to categorize animals the way we categorize animals today. You understand that, right? I hear this over and over and over again from skeptics and Bible critics. Things like, can you believe that they called a bat a bird in Leviticus chapter 11? I mean, last night I was on YouTube listening to a skeptic review some of our materials at AP, and I was just, you know, just bothered by their unreasonable attacks on the Bible, including, I mean, he came up with this big thing about how ignorant we are because we believe what the Bible says and the Bible calls a bat a bird. Well, wait just a minute. In regarding creation, for example, when do I think bats were created? Were they created with land animals on day 6 or flying things on day 5? They were created with the flying things on day 5. And so you have mammals like dolphins and whales that would have been created on day 5 because they swim in the oceans right along with fish. God didn't split things up in his word like Carolus Linnaeus did centuries later. He's kind of viewed as the father of taxonomy. Split up, you know, how we categorize animals today. It can be helpful to know the different categories, excuse me. I feel like Scooby-Doo up here saying categories or something. He didn't split things up the way humans did. He didn't have to. He didn't need to. So let's be careful. And by the way, when you hear Bible critics say things like that, and you might hear a professor say something like that one day, just kind of stop for a minute and say, is that really a legitimate criticism? Well, let's go back to Genesis 1 for a moment. God made land animals on day 6, and by definition, dinosaurs are land animals. By definition, you have dinosaur-like flying reptiles that once lived, like Quetzalcoatlus or Pterodactyl or Pteranodon. You have dinosaur-like water-living reptiles that once lived, like Plesiosaurus. But when it comes to the term dinosaur, it actually means a land animal. By definition, they're land animals. Genesis 1 tells us all land animals were created on day 6. And so I realize this is a very elementary explanation. But when someone asks you, when did God make dinosaurs? I believe it's a very easy answer. Genesis 1 tells us that God made land animals on day 6. I believe that God made dinosaurs on day 6 alongside man. God made man on day 6. Now, I'm not saying that He made David Sproul and Dan Jenkins on day 6, but He made their great-great-great-great-grandpappy on day 6, if you will. Okay? I always kind of look to find some way to get the picture of these two guys or something around. Those are two good-looking guys, aren't they? I tell you what, their wives are blessed women to have men like that in their lives. And those men are very blessed, I tell you, much more blessed to have their wives in their lives, I think. And then you have other statements like this that I would kind of view as commentary on Genesis 1, where Moses said, and I've already mentioned this a couple of times this weekend, in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Okay, so He not only made the heavens, He not only made the earth, He not only made the water, He made everything that is in the heavens, that is on the earth, that is in the water. And so again, generally speaking, the Bible tells us, the Bible may not mention specific dinosaurs, it may not mention the English word for dinosaur, but generally speaking, it talks about these animals. Furthermore, let me show you what the Bible has to say about another couple of amazing creatures that I believe sound very much like some large creatures that once lived in the past. And I realize there would be people who say, come on, Eric, I don't believe what you're saying here. But I invite you to just see what God has to say here in Job chapter 40 and chapter 41. In this particular passage of Job, you recall most people are very familiar with Job chapters 1 and 2 and Job chapter 42, where Job goes through some immense suffering and loses practically everything. And then he is very blessed at the end of the story. By the way, recall that Job wasn't able to read a book about his life to figure out how it was all going to end out. That man was, he said that I will trust in God. Though He slay me, I will trust in Him. That is a great attitude, young people. You're going to go through ups and downs in your life. You're going to go through trials, through fiery trials. You need to have the attitude that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had, who said, you know, God can deliver us from this fire, but whether He does or not, God is great. We're going to serve Him. Though He slay me, yet while I trust in Him, Job's attitude was an amazing, amazing book. Some of the amazing chapters in this book come from chapter 38, 39, 40, and 41, where God speaks to Job out of a whirlwind. Job wants to know why all this bad stuff is happening to him, because he knows he hasn't lived a rotten, sinful life. He's been serving God. Why is this happening? He wants an answer. It's amazing to me that God comes to him and talks to him about animals and about His creation. Never gives him a direct answer to the question that he has. God's ways are higher than our ways, Isaiah said. He's not going to tell us everything that we want to hear exactly the way we want to hear it. He knows what's best for us. He knew what was best for Job. And by the way, at the end of God's two speeches to Job, Job was sorry for what he had said. And he was ready to continue to follow God, and even though he didn't understand everything that was going on with him. Well, in this passage, God speaks to Job about a few different animals. We're going to mention a few of these Sunday morning. A couple of these include one creature named Behemoth and another named Leviathan. Now, a lot of people would say that this animal known as Behemoth, which I made along with you, God says to Job, was either a hippopotamus or an elephant. Okay? Well, if you get a chance, we're not going to go through every verse in Job 40, verses 15 and following today, but I want you to see some of these verses and see what God tells Job about. Now, keep in mind, whatever animal God is discussing to Job, this took place, God was speaking to Job, some, I would estimate, about 4,000 years ago. We don't know exactly when Job lived. But Job was not an Israelite. There's nothing in the book of Job about the law of Moses. He was a patriarch. I tend to believe he lived before the time of Abraham. But if not before the time of Abraham, perhaps around the time of Abraham. That's several thousand years ago. Have there been a lot of animals that have gone extinct in the last 4,000 years? A lot. So I don't know why people contend that these have to be animals that are still alive today. Now consider some of the description of these animals. He eats grass like an ox. See, now his strength is in his hips and his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. When you go through Scripture, my colleague Dave Miller just recently wrote an article about the word cedar throughout the Old Testament. And these are only a few of the verses that I wanted to show you. That you read the word cedar, things that are big, that are large, that are giant, that are massive, oftentimes were compared to the cedars, especially the cedars of Lebanon. Why? Because they were what? Because they were big, they were grandiose, they were large. The righteous shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. There's a characteristic of the faithful child of God's righteousness. Indeed, Assyria was a cedar of high stature. Well, when you go through the Bible and you see this over and over and over again, and then you consider Job chapter 40 and how the tail of Behemoth was said to move like a cedar, I think it's hard to imagine there that God is talking about an elephant. And I realize there would be people who would disagree with me here, but I'm thinking God is speaking to Job about how great God is. About His omnipotence, about His omniscience, about His sovereignty over His amazing creation. And He says, here is Behemoth that sways his tail like a cedar. Not to sound disrespectful at all, but I would just have a hard time thinking that Job's going to be blown away with the tail of an elephant, and certainly not blown away with the tail of a hippopotamus. But I tell you what we do know is that there were animals that once lived on this earth that had tails that were 20, 25, 30, 35 feet long, that weighed thousands or tens of thousands of pounds. You can go to the Fernbank Museum in Atlanta, Georgia and see a replica of Argentinosaurus that had a tail something like 30 feet long. They estimate. They didn't find every single fossil of that animal, but they estimate that it was about that long. You can read how God said His bones are like beams of bronze, His ribs like bars of iron. I understand this is poetic language. I understand in poetic language there oftentimes is exaggeration. By the way, there's exaggeration. There's hyperbole even when it's not poetic language. So I freely understand this is poetry. But I also understand that God has communicated truth through poetry, just like people communicate truth through poetry today. Many of the songs that we sing oftentimes in our worship to God, they're poetic, but they speak truth. And if they don't speak truth, then we don't need to sing them. His ribs are like bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only He who made Him can bring near His sword. Again, this is poetic language. I firmly believe there's hyperbole spoken here. But it's hard for me to believe that this is talking about the hippopotamus or even the elephant. Considering the ancients, for example, they used to go out and hunt the hippos. The Egyptians had days known as harpooning the hippopotamus days. I just saw when I got back to the hotel room last night, I try to make it a habit to not watch a lot of TV, but after speaking and having a long day, I decided to turn on the TV and I noticed that Lord of the Rings was on, and it got to one of the most amazing parts of that the trilogy, where Lord of the Rings is a trilogy, right? Is that right? There's three Lord of the Rings movies. You can tell I haven't seen them very many times, but I do remember this amazing scene where they're in battle and the big elephants are used in battle. By the way, that's not all that abnormal as far as world history goes, because history tells us that ancients in the past have used elephants in war, in battle, like Hannibal did, the general of the Carthaginian army back 2,200 years ago. So animals like elephants and hippos, they've been killed. They've even, some of them, have been tamed. It's hard for me to believe that God there was speaking to Job about an elephant or a hippo. I believe sounds a whole lot more like what we hear, what we have learned from the fossil record, that how big and large some of the dinosaurs were. For example, Argentinosaurus had a rib bone. Talk about rib bone like bars of iron. He had a rib bone that was 14 feet long, the largest dinosaur that man has ever uncovered from the fossil record. Another animal that God spoke to Job about was Leviathan. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? We're told in Bible footnotes, that is man-made commentary on the Bible, in commentaries that Leviathan was probably an alligator or a crocodile. Well, I want you to see again how God describes this amazing creature to Job. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? This is a rhetorical question. The answer is what? You can't draw out this creature with a hook. Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Not this creature. This is some amazing animal. Though the sword reaches him, it cannot avail. Again, I understand it's poetic, but that's pretty amazing. Nor does spear, dart, or javelin. What's the truth that God is communicating to Job here? This is some mighty, amazing creature that is not going to be easily taken down by man. Darts are regarded as straw and bronze as rotten wood. Whoa, bronze to this animal? It's like rotten wood. That's strength. That's power. That's an amazing creature. I would contend, I don't know that we've seen on earth today. Hard for me to believe that this is an alligator or a crocodile, considering the ancients, for example, the ancient Egyptians, they used to go out and hunt crocodiles. They used to go out and kill crocodiles. They even mummified crocodiles. And then we have people, even in our own times, who will go out and, well, you remember a few years ago, the famous crocodile hunter, who will, for lack of a better term, play with these creatures. Hard for me to imagine this is the animal that God is describing to Job in Job chapter 41. Furthermore, Leviathan's undersides are like sharp potsherds or sharp pieces of broken pottery. I don't know how this would describe a crocodile or an alligator, considering the underside of the crocodile is what? Is it like sharp pieces of broken pottery? No, smooth. You ever seen anyone wear some? Well, maybe you felt the underside of an alligator or crocodile. I never have, but I've seen crocodile or alligator boots anyway, and I've seen pictures of crocodiles and alligators. They're not like sharp pieces of broken pottery underneath. When this animal comes up out of the water on the land, he spreads pointed marks in the mire or in the mud. Again, tells you something about his underside. On earth, there is nothing like him which is made without fear. He beholds every high thing. Now, Job is one of the more difficult books to translate into the English language because there are several Hebrew words in the book of Job that do not appear anywhere else. And so sometimes in passages like here, you have different translations, different words used to translate these things. The New King James translates it, he beholds every high thing. Again, if that is an accurate translation, I don't really see how that applies to alligators and crocodiles. But no doubt the most amazing description, not that man gives, but that God gives to this animal known as Leviathan, is found in verses 18 through 21, where God says, his, Leviathan's, sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, and a flame of fire goes out of his mouth. You're sitting there thinking, that's crazy. I didn't know that was in the Bible. That sounds like a what? Like a dragon? But haven't we been told all of our lives that dragons were what? Myth. Mythical. Make-believe. Dragons, something breathing fire and smoke out of their mouths. You know, there was one gentleman by the name of Hugh Ross who claims to be a Christian and says that he believes in the Bible, but he also believes in evolution. He says that no dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke. I was on listening to a skeptic last night on YouTube, and he basically said the same thing. We know that no dinosaurs breathed fire or smoke. Here's my question to that. You claim that dinosaurs lived 60 plus million years before humans, and then you make the statement The affirmation that no dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke? How do they know that? Young people, those are the kinds of things I would encourage you to ask. If not, verbalizing it out loud, in your mind think, wait a minute, the teacher just said no human being ever lived with dinosaurs, and then the teacher said no dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke. How do they know that? How do they know that? They don't. Now, hang with me here, because I realize you may be sitting there thinking, that dude has lost his mind. He's saying that some animals may have breathed fire and smoke. I don't know about that. Well, let's back up here. Let's try to reason through this for just a moment. Okay? And again, this is not about fire and smoke. This is not about, you know, just merely about animals. We're trying to make all of this come back around to Bible, to reason, to creation, to dinosaurs. Think about this for a moment. As odd as it may seem to you to think about an animal breathing fire or smoke, ask yourself this. First of all, why would atheistic evolutionists have a problem believing that an animal could, according to their idea, evolve the ability to breathe fire and or smoke? I mean, think about it for just a moment. Atheistic evolutionists, as we talked about last night, believe everything came from nothing. Atheistic evolutionists believe that life evolved accidentally from non-life. No one's ever seen something come from nothing, and no one has ever seen life come from non-life, but they believe those things. In nature, that is. They believe in nature, life came from non-life. They believe that you evolved from ape-like creatures over millions of years. Never seen anything like that happen. They just believe that. So my question is, why would it, if they believe that everything came from nothing, that life came from non-life, according to that theory, our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents were really not just toads, as we mentioned last night, according to that theory, but they were rocks. They were, when it talks about some of our ancestors being dumb as rocks, well, according to that theory, we came from lifeless matter. That's the slide we showed to begin the lesson last night by Charles Smith, who said in the beginning was, he didn't really get it right. According to that theory, in the beginning was basically nothing that evolved into matter, but he said in the beginning was matter which gave way to life. Inorganic, according to their theory, gave way to the organic, non-life to life. So if you're an atheistic evolutionist, why would it be hard to believe that an animal could evolve the ability to do this? Of course, I reject atheistic evolution. And here's my point. My point is this. If you are a Christian and you realize that God is Almighty God who created the entire universe with the breath of His mouth, who created the sun and the moon and the stars, who created planet Earth and everything on it, do we think it was really too hard for God to create an animal that spewed something out of its mouth that at the very least resembled fire and smoke? I don't think that's too hard. Is anything too hard for God? Anything that could logically, possibly be done, God can do. What I mean is God's not going to make a round square or square circle. It's a logical impossibility. He's not going to create a rock that's too big for Him to lift. But when it comes to, can He create an animal that's purple? He could. Could He create an animal that has two legs instead of four legs? Sure, we have animals like that today. Could He create an animal that spewed something out of its mouth? Sure, He could. Consider some of the things that God did create. He created the electric eel. Now, I realize that people say, yeah, but that's no dinosaur, fire-breathing dinosaur. No, it's not. But do you realize what the electric eel can do? If you touch this animal, you could be shocked. You could be shocked so bad that you would have to go to the hospital. Can you shock people? You say, well, Eric, I can get some static electricity going, and I can shock you. Yeah, and you're not going to hurt anybody. You might scare somebody, but you're not going to hurt anybody. This animal produces it in its body. How did it do that? The evolution said, yes, it evolved the ability to shock people and things. Really? Could you imagine the evolution of the electric eel? Had never shocked anything before. How did it not shock itself and kill itself? Oh, well, it had to evolve that insulation around its body so it could shock other people, but not shock other things, but not shock its... Well, how does evolution do that? Did evolution know? Has it got intelligence to know that I need to do this before I do that? Or what about the firefly? The lightning bug. Here's an animal. I realize it's not fire and smoke, but please consider this. It lights up its tail. Can you do that? Now you may say, my parents have done that for me a few times. This animal, not on its own, this animal was created, designed with chemicals that scientists call luciferin and luciferous, and they combine it with oxygen and they can light up their tail. Get off your iPads, iPods, Wii's, and every other device you have and go outside on a summer night. Do y'all have fireflies down here, by the way? No, some? Anyway, maybe they migrate down here once every now and then. I don't know. Anyway, go up to Alabama sometime, all right? See the fireflies, because our family loves to go outside in a summer night and just see these animals just lighting up. It's amazing. And by the way, I like electronics, okay? I like PowerPoint. I like computers. I like iPads and iPods. But sometimes we need to, look around at the amazing creation of God. He created the electric eel. He created the firefly, the lightning bug. He created the bombardier beetle that can blow something out of its back end at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Somebody tell me what that is. That's the boiling point of water. I realize, okay, someone says, yes, but that's not fire. I'm just giving you some amazing examples of animals still alive on this planet today that do some remarkable things. I don't know any humans that's been blowing something out of their back end at 212 degrees Fahrenheit and can do it repeatedly. This thing, it can do it like a machine gun when it's agitated, like by this scientist probe here. I mean, could you imagine the evolution of the bombardier beetle walking around one day? I don't like you. I'm going to just blow something out of my back end at 212. Can you believe what would happen the first time? It would have blown up. It would have died. And that would have been all over for the bombardier beetle. It didn't somehow accidentally, over millions of years, evolve the ability to blow up its back end. Not hurt itself, but hurt whatever animal that it's aiming the chemicals and the mixture at. This is an amazing little creature. Again, I'm not saying these animals are perfectly like dragons by any means. I'm just showing you a few animals that we have today that are amazing little creatures. And that it certainly seems illogical to me to say, well, God could have created an animal that could spew something out of its mouth at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, if you can spew it out your back end, I guess you could spew it out your front end too, your top as well as your bottom. I mean, not... You know, anyway, sorry. Yep, I need to go back to my science books and remember the precise scientific terminology for some of these things here. Here is an illustration that Louis Lavoie, who illustrated our children's dinosaur book, Dinosaurs Unleashed, here is an illustration that he made. Again, it's an artist idea that he had after he read Job 41 over and over again. We asked Mr. Louis Lavoie, we said, Louis, would you please just read Job 41, and to the best of your ability, just illustrate what you read. I have no idea if this is what Leviathan looked like. Okay, please understand that. But when you read the description in Job 41 and you see this illustration, I do think there are a lot of similarities. Now, in the last few minutes here, I know our time is getting away from us. We're going to take a break here, as soon as I get through this next session, and we'll take about a 5-minute break and come back in here and get part two of this. But let me finish this section. We've talked about what the Bible says. What does history have to say? Here's what I want you to hear. And again, you can decide for yourself whether it makes sense or not. I fully believe that when you look at history, you read history, it lines up perfectly. No surprise. With what the Bible says, including on this subject. What does history have to say about dinosaurs? Now get this, hang with me here for just a few more minutes before we take a break. They were not called dinosaurs throughout history, they were called dragons. Because the word dinosaur didn't exist until when? 1800s, 1840s. Okay, so the term dinosaur was not coined until the 1840s. Ancients used the word dragon from the Greek drakon, to refer to any large serpent or reptile, whether real or mythological, aquatic, aerial, or terrestrial. Water living animal, flying animal, or land living animal. Have some dragon legends been embellished over time? Sure they have. However, exaggerations do not negate the overriding truth that fearfully great reptiles, dinosaurs, of many different shapes and sizes once lived with humans. Anyone ever told a true story but yet maybe unintentionally exaggerated some things about that story? Now, I'm sure Dan didn't exaggerate the story. Dan raised his hand back there. All the preachers, raise your hand. Dan was telling me today about someone who was in the Gulf Stream out here that drifted 150 miles or so down the Gulf Stream. I imagine he didn't exaggerate that story. I'm just kind of picking on Dan this morning. But maybe it was 111 miles they drifted, not 150 or whatever. Dan, I'm just picking on you. Sorry. I've exaggerated stories, no doubt. One time when I was riding my bike when I was probably in the sixth grade, there was a big dog. I mean, he was a big dog, okay? A big dog who chased me about a half a mile, maybe more like three-tenths of a mile. But anyway, I was a kid. I still remember that to this day. I remember just pulling in our driveway on my little bike and Huffy 300 Challenger, whatever it was, and running in the garage and shutting the garage door right behind me, and he was right there at the door. I was scared to death. No doubt, I've told that story a few times, and I've exaggerated a few times. When I was in Alaska a few years ago, I was out riding bikes with some friends, and there was a moose that got spooked when a guy came across right behind him on some rollerblades. And he looked up right at me. At least I thought he was looking right at me, and he started chasing. And I started on my bike, and I had just seen a video a few days before of a moose trampling a person to death, so I was kind of scared. And I just took off. I've told that story several times in my life. No telling how many times I unintentionally exaggerated some parts of the story, or because of my feeble memory, I don't recall exactly, precisely everything that took place. You ever seen a Quetzalcoatlus flying through the sky with a 40-foot wingspan? You probably would have unintentionally, at times, exaggerated some of the things that you saw and heard. So just because some people exaggerated some of the details of these stories doesn't mean that nothing like dinosaurs or dragons ever lived. Please understand, we've talked about what the Bible has to say about this. For just the next couple of minutes, notice what history tells us about some of these things. First of all, I'm going to show you some quotations, not from creationists, but from evolutionists, and what they had to say about dragons. So please understand, I'm not quoting a bunch of Christians right here. I'm quoting people who are very skeptical about creation. And what their own writings say is that dragon legends have been told and found all over the world and go back a long time ago. The ubiquity of dragon legends, the implacable mutual hostility, or the constant hostility between man and dragon. Carl Sagan, one of the most famous evolutionists of the last century, said, "This is not a Western anomaly. It is a worldwide phenomenon." So I want you to ask this question as we read these quotations. Why have dragon legends been told all over the world? Dragons are found in the myths and legends of cultures all around the world, wrote evolutionist Kerr Thane in his 2007 article on LiveScience.com. Daniel Cohen, in his 1975 book, said, "People all over the world have believed in dragons." Here is an introduction to a DVD that Animal Planet put out on dragons. Now, they believe that dragons were mythical creatures. Yeah, nothing like this ever lived. They don't believe that humans and dinosaurs lived together. I want you to see what their introduction, what they said, the first few lines of this video, what they said about dragons. Let me back up here. They said, "There is one creature remembered in the legends of almost every human culture that's ever existed. A creature depicted with remarkable similarity by the Chinese, the Aztecs, even the Inuit who live in a frozen land where no reptiles are found. Even they have stories of this animal, the dragon." Cultures from different continents, people who had no contact with one another, yet all of them had stories describing the same mythical animal. Mythical animal, they say. Young people, don't want you to answer this yet, but just ask yourselves this. Why would people all over the world, even according to evolutionists, why would people all over the world, thousands of years ago, why would they all be talking about large or sometimes small reptilian creatures that sound like dinosaurs? The stories have not only been found all over the world, but they go back to virtually the beginning of human history. Samuel Kramer, in his book History Begins at Sumer, said the dragon slaying theme was an important motif in the Sumerian mythology of the 3rd millennium B.C. It was a well-known story, and stories like them being told thousands of years ago. This is the animal about which humankind has throughout our history been most compelled by. Dragon legends have been with humanity since the dawn of recorded history. Please understand, once again, I'm not quoting creationist here, okay? At least I don't know so much about Samuel Kramer, but this is the Animal Planet DVD, and this is Science Digest, an evolutionary journal, or a journal that's pro-evolution. So dinosaur or dragon legends have been told all over the world, and they go back to basically the beginning of human history. So why have people been talking about these animals, all over the world since virtually the beginning of time? Animals with scaly, hard, elongated bodies, long serpentine necks, enormous tails, stout legs, horn, knobby, and crested heads, fearsome teeth, claws, spikes, with or without bat-like wings, with two legs, sometimes with four legs. You know, a few years ago in 2003 in South Dakota, there was a dinosaur that was excavated. And those scientists who excavated the dinosaur, by the way, this is now, at least as a few years ago, it was on display at the Children's Museum in Indianapolis, Indiana. They said that this dinosaur looked like a dragon. And so they named the dinosaur Dracorex, which means dragon king. Now let me ask you this. Why would any scientist name a dinosaur dragon? Because it, well, look at their words. They said, when we saw this creature's head, we weren't sure what kind of dinosaur it was. Its spiky horns, bumps, and long muzzle looked more like a dragon. It's a new type of dinosaur that looks like a dragon. How do we know what dragons look like? Well, because people have been talking about them for thousands of years, and people have been illustrating them for thousands of years. Again, are there some dragon stories and illustrations that are certainly more mythical than real and so forth? Are there serious exaggerations? For sure. But we just looked at many of the common characteristics of these animals. And here are scientists who say, well, we're going to call him dragon. Why? Well, because he looks like a dragon. But he's a dinosaur. Yeah, but he looks like a dragon. You see where I'm going with all this. Kerr Than wrote an article on livescience.com. He's an evolutionist, writes for Live Science and I think other websites as well from time to time. And his article was this. I'm about to wind this down to take a quick break. His article was basically trying to explain what I'm wanting you to think about for a moment. Wait a minute, why are there stories of dragons all over the world that sound like dinosaurs? So he came up with all these ideas. Well, I think dragon legends came from maybe people seeing little lizards on the ground and they just, you know, embellished lizards that they live with. And then they said, well, maybe they were just embellishing bigger lizards like the Komodo dragons and things. Komodo dragon is actually it's a real animal living today. They just, because it's, I guess, one of, if not the biggest lizard on earth today, they call it a dragon. That's another interesting thing that we call lizards dragons. But their number three option was this, that is Kerr Than's. I found this very interesting. He said, of all the creatures that ever lived, pterosaurs probably most closely resemble the dragons of European legend. Reptilian and featherless, pterosaurs flew on wings of hide and were supported by a single long and bony finger. The smallest pterosaur was the size of a sparrow, while Quetzalcoatlus, named after the Aztec god, had a wingspan of more than 40 feet, making it the largest flying creature ever. So here is an evolutionist who said, you know what, of all the creatures that ever lived, these dinosaur-like flying reptiles most resemble the dragons, at least of European legend, than any other animal. And again, by the way, I'm not saying that every dinosaur would have breathed fire. Okay? It could have been just some kind, one kind of dinosaur that God created that he called Leviathan. Here are other animals that fit in perfectly with what history has to tell us about these creatures. Now, it's interesting, and I'll close with this, and we'll take about a 5-minute break, that Kerr Than, after making that statement, he said, wait a minute, let me tell you really the number one explanation for why we have dragon legends all around the world, and they've been around for thousands of years. Here's the explanation, he said. And to me, this epitomizes the foolishness of evolutionary thinking. This is what he said. He said to people living in ancient times, a comet streaking through the skies with an icy tail millions of miles long would have closely resembled such a creature. If comets were the inspiration for some dragon legends, it could help explain why dragons are ubiquitous in myths and legends of so many different cultures in all corners of the world. Young people, I fully believe, and we're going to talk about some of the scientific evidence here in a few minutes, some of the physical evidence, I fully believe, once again, that what we read in God's Word fully agrees with what true, real, rational, historical information, logic tells us. By the way, a few years ago, I guess it was about a year ago now, my sons and I, we were coming back from an indoor soccer game in Montgomery, and they had just played a game. I had Micah sitting in the front seat, Bo was sitting in the back seat, and we were driving down Atlanta Highway in Montgomery, and saw one of the weirdest things I'd ever seen in my life. I've been around for 36 years now. I've seen a few weird things. A light streaking through the sky. I looked at it, it lasted about three seconds. I thought it was a bottle rocket or something streaking through the sky, and then all of a sudden it turned into a huge flame of fire. It looked unreal. It was so weird to me. My sons saw it. They thought that was wild. Went back home. You can Google anything these days. Go to Google News and Google this and that. And a day later, I Googled some stuff about this. And sure enough, there had been some kind of a meteor or asteroid or something that people had seen in Florida, in Georgia, in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Arkansas, and Oklahoma. People had all said they had seen the thing. Scientists said it was some. I can't remember if they said now if it was an asteroid, a meteor, or what they said exactly. But I know this. I can tell you this. There wasn't one person in my car who looked up at that and said, "That looked like a dragon." Not one. It looked like amazing little light streaking through the sky that turned into a bigger ball of fire and then it vanished. It was amazing.